are all of these areas areas that should move forward? No.
State leaders walk a fine line on Trump's offshore drilling proposal. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a ballot initiative that cuts lawmakers' pay if they don't finish a budget on time.
I've learned, with the few signatures I gathered, just talk about the per diem pay. And they've stopped, you don't need to tell me anymore, I'm happy to sign it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski today condemned President Trump for a vulgar term he reportedly used in the White House Thursday, referring to countries in Africa and elsewhere. Murkowski issued a statement saying what the president said in a discussion about immigration is offensive and doesn't reflect who we are as a country. She suggested moving quickly to resolve the status of dreamers, undocumented people brought to the U.S. as children, quote, in a way that truly reflects our values. The Trump administration recently proposed a vast expansion of federal waters available for oil development, and many U.S. states were not pleased. Alaska is a different story. State leaders got what they wanted in the plan and then some. Now the question is, will Alaska ask the Trump administration to cut back? Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk reports.
Just 5 days after Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke proposed making over 90% of federal waters available for oil leasing, this happened in Florida.
Governor Rick Scott came out against the idea and demanded a meeting with Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. After getting together tonight in Tallahassee, Secretary Zinke was singing a different tune.
Zinke removed Republican-led Florida from the offshore leasing plan. And then came the political firestorm from Democratic leaders of states like Virginia and Oregon, who also want to be excluded. Among other things, they accused Zinke of political favoritism. Now, the Interior Secretary says he'll meet with every governor, Republican and Democrat, before making a final decision. So where does Alaska fit in? Of course, Alaska wants offshore oil development. The Walker administration asked Zinke to open the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas to drilling. But Zinke also proposed allowing drilling off all of Alaska's other shores, too, except for the region around Bristol Bay. That sparked concerns from the fishing industry and tribes across the Bering Strait region. Here's what Alaska Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Andy Mack had to say when I asked him about that.
Did the state of Alaska ask the Trump administration, yes, please open up all these areas, but the North Aleutian Basin? Was that request coming from the state?
No, we didn't make the request.
To confirm that, the Walker administration provided a letter Mack sent to the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management in August. The letter specifically asks for lease sales in the Chukchi Sea, the Beaufort Sea, and Cook Inlet, but nowhere else. Mack says the state wasn't looking at expanding oil development beyond those areas.
We're going to focus on the Arctic, and we think that that is where the real opportunity sits.
So will Walker ask Zinke to remove areas besides Cook Inlet and the Arctic from the final offshore plan? The governor's office hasn't yet responded to a request for comment on that. Senator Lisa Murkowski took a clearer stand.
Are all of these areas areas that should move forward? No. I'll just say that right out. No.
But Murkowski wasn't criticizing Zinke. She says this is just a proposal, and she likes this proposal a lot more than what the Obama administration rolled out. She says it's just a draft.
I think for some, it was a little bit shocking because it was like, whoa, he's just opened up everything. The secretary didn't open up anything. What he did was he put a draft out there saying, this is the universe that we're talking about.
Murkowski wants and expects that universe to shrink. As long as it includes offshore oil lease sales in the Arctic and Cook Inlet, Zinke can expect continued support for his plan from both Murkowski and the Walker administration. With help from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., for Alaska's Energy Desk in Anchorage, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh.
Alaska voters are a step closer to deciding whether lawmakers will be paid if they fail to pass a budget on time. The group Alaskans for Integrity says it likely has more than enough signed petitions to put an initiative on the fall ballot that would accomplish that. It submitted more than 45,000 signatures for the Alaska Government Accountability Act. Bonnie Jack is a co-chair for the group. She says it doesn't take much to convince people to sign.
I've learned, with the few signatures I gathered, was just talk about the per diem pay. And they stop, you don't need to tell me anymore, I'm happy to sign it.
In the last 3 years, lawmakers haven't agreed on a budget before the end of the 121-day session limit set by the state constitution. Lawmakers are currently entitled to more than $200 per day when the session runs long. The bill would stop those payments. Anchorage Representative Jason Gren sponsored the initiative.
Well, I like to think of it as incentivizing us to get our job done in time. But, you know, I think Alaskans are just kind of fed up with what looks like from the outside that not a lot of work happens, and we wait until the very end to start working on passing a budget. And I think that hurts a lot of different sectors of Alaska when people are waiting and waiting and waiting, and then we end up going past our time limit.
The bill also would take steps to limit lawmakers' conflicts of interest and the gifts lawmakers receive. It would require them to provide justification before the state would pay for international travel, and it would bar foreign-owned corporations from contributing to state and local political campaigns. Governor Bill Walker has proposed docking lawmakers' per diem payments and their salaries if they don't pass a budget by the end of the 90-day session. The backers of a controversial salmon protection ballot initiative say they have gathered 40,000 signatures. That's enough to qualify it for inclusion on the statewide ballot for this year's election. A newly formed group called Yes for Salmon announced they delivered the signatures to the state's Division of Elections on Tuesday in Anchorage. Backers of the ballot initiative say it will protect salmon habitat. It will add to the permitting process for developing the state's resources. But the state, industry groups, and several Alaska Native corporations have criticized it as having far-reaching implications. They say it could interfere with developing smaller projects like airstrips and roads. Alaskans will vote on this initiative during the November 6th general election. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Kaufman Cove kids learn about growing your own food in a local greenhouse.
We got, like, blueberries. They were huge, but they were yummy too.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska's founders knew that to build a great state, we would need a great university. Today, UA offers more than 400 degrees and certificates with campuses from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. They are leaders in Arctic and Alaska research and dedicated to direct hands-on teaching, whether online, in the classroom, or in the field. Greatness awaits you. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
North Pole Representative Tammy Wilson says fellow lawmaker Gabrielle Ledoux should resign because she failed to promptly respond to a legislative staffer's complaint that she was sexually harassed by a lawmaker who was later forced to resign over those and other allegations. Ledoux is an Anchorage Republican who chairs the House Rules Committee, and she denies Wilson's accusation. She says it's politically motivated and stems from a dispute over sexual harassment training that all lawmakers and staffers are being required to take this year. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Wilson raised a ruckus a week ago when she issued a Friday afternoon statement accusing Ledoux of failing to follow up on a legislative staff member's report filed last spring, alleging the staffer had been sexually harassed by former Representative Dean Westlake.
Well, the complaint was put in March, And so it sat there for months and months before anybody even knew it was there.
Westlake, a Democrat from Kiana, resigned last month after more women came forward to accuse him of harassment. But Wilson says Ledoux should have acted sooner to investigate the case and punish Westlake, because taking care of legislative staff is one of the House Rules Committee chair's main responsibilities. So Wilson is calling for an outside investigator to look into whether Ledoux and House leaders failed to uphold their responsibility to follow up on the complaint.
Yes, Representative Westlake has resigned, but what happens to those who did nothing? Something needs to be done. A third-party investigation needs to be done to find out, you know, who knew what when.
The others at fault, Wilson says, include House Majority Leader Chris Tuck and Speaker Bryce Edgman. Both are Democrats. Tuck is from Anchorage, Edgman is from Dillingham, and Wilson says they too should resign if an outside investigator determines they didn't follow the legislature's sexual harassment policies and procedures.
We need to know why they hid for so long the accusation that they didn't investigate it immediately, that they didn't make sure that others were not going to be hurt.
A spokesman for the House leadership declined comment on Wilson's accusations. Ledoux says neither she nor the House leaders hid the staffer's complaints, and she notes that Wilson admits she has no evidence for that accusation. Ledoux says she initially wasn't told about the complaint, which she says was handled by Edgman, who confronted Westlake and urged him to resign.
As far as I know, there's been no other caucus in the history of the legislature that has ever called for a member to resign. And believe me, there's been plenty of sexual harassment in the legislature.
Ledoux says she can't say much more about it until a report on the issue is made public.
Now, that doesn't mean that the procedures can't be improved, and that is why we've initiated a legislative subcommittee to review our procedures, to review our sexual harassment policy, so that we can maybe improve things.
Ledoux says legislative leaders have instituted new rules requiring all lawmakers and their staffers to take sexual harassment training, even if they've already attended previous sessions. She suspects that's one reason why Wilson is attacking her, because she says Wilson has refused to participate in the training, and in response, Ledoux has threatened to cut off her authority to hire staff.
For some reason, Ms. Wilson thinks that she should be exempt from this training and doesn't have to take it. And that's what annoys her so much.
Wilson says she won't participate in the training because she's already attended earlier sessions and because she's waiting for an outside investigator to be brought in and for Ledoux and House leaders to explain why they didn't move more quickly on the allegations against Westlake.
This is not that I won't take the training, but I am not doing any other training done by this Democrat majority until they are able to answer the questions on what happened.
Ledoux says she also sees a partisan motivation behind Wilson's attacks. She says conservatives dislike her and other Republican lawmakers who work with their Democratic counterparts in the House coalition.
It's simply a political hit job because the Republican Party has a target on my back.
Both Wilson and Ledoux say they'll be headed to Juneau this weekend for the start of this year's legislative session, which gets underway on Tuesday. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Juneau state legislators hosted a town hall last night to hear from the public and talk through concerns. The 2018 legislative session begins next week. KTOO's Adeline Baxter reports.
In a packed room at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library, Senator Dennis Egan and Representatives Justin Parrish and Sam Keto III struck a somewhat pessimistic tone as they fielded questions from constituents.
We are getting to the point where we are almost out of savings in our constitutional budget reserve account.
That's Keto. He said oil revenue went from making up about 90% of state earnings to now between 20 and 25%, forcing the state to draw on savings.
We still have to provide for education and public health according to our constitution. We have to provide a transportation system. All of those things cost money.
The state needs to find ways to cover that deficit, he said, whether through a proposed state income tax, dipping into the permanent fund, or some other solution. Budget reserves won't last. Senator Egan shared his own reservations about the upcoming session.
It's an election year, and a lot of times, every 2 years, a lot of things don't happen because people are running for re-election, and they're afraid to tackle major issues. And that concerns me. It shouldn't be about election years. It should be about solving Alaska's problems.
Helen Unruh asked if there was anything to be done about legislative inaction. Representative Parrish suggested leaning on other Alaskans.
Do you have any friends in Fairbanks? If you have any friends who are represented by a senator who's in the majority, please have them call their senator. I know that when I get a call from a constituent, I take it very seriously.
Still, several community members echoed the feeling that Alaska's fiscal future is being held hostage by the Republican-led Senate majority. Juneau's legislators are all Democrats. Egan didn't contest one constituent's observation at the town hall.
We're not talking, and there's just not enough being done during the session. Lord knows the governor has tried to force you guys to work it out, you know, calling you guys back over and over again, but to no avail.
But we do nothing.
Yeah.
Afterward, Egan said the partisan politics that have overtaken the legislature weren't always the norm.
Well, I thought we functioned really well when we were a bipartisan working group. We did a lot of great things for the people of the state, but we worked together, Republicans and Democrats and an independent, but we got things done. Lately, I don't like it. I mean, I don't like the way it's been functioning.
The 30th Alaska Legislature reconvenes Tuesday. In Juneau, I'm Madeline Baxter.
Now that the final deadline has come and gone, 26 mushers are signed up for this year's Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race. According to the Quest, Kotzebue musher Catherine Keith was the last to sign up before the final deadline on January 5th. Keith, along with veterans Alan Moore, Hugh Neff, and 2017 champ Matt Hall, will join more than 10 rookies on the trail, like Ike Underwood of Aniak. There are a total of 15 veterans and 11 rookies signed up to run the 2018 Yukon Quest, five more mushers than last year's race. The 35th annual Yukon Quest is scheduled to start on February 3rd and is expected that the first musher will travel the 1,000 miles from Whitehorse, Yukon to Fairbanks within 2 weeks. Teachers at the Haines School got a surprise when, taking attendance for the first time following the holidays, an unexpected number of their students were missing. KHNS's Barrett Wilbur has more.
17 students didn't return to the Haines School District after winter break. In total, that's a little more than 6% of the student body.
Families having to leave our town because they can't support their family is super concerning.
That's Principal Renee Martin. She says up to 5 of the students were seniors graduating early. Martin couldn't confirm an exact number since demographic groups of kids that small are kept confidential for privacy. But the other 12 are students whose families pulled them out of school because they couldn't afford to stay in Haines, Martin said.
I think for the kids, it's sad to see their friends go. I think the demoralizing part is really more for us and the board and the borough assembly because, you know, we're struggling to try to find jobs and figure out how can we help families so that this doesn't happen. And it's just a struggle.
Haines' school population is at a historic low and has been declining steadily for years, Martin says. 256 students are currently enrolled, not including the 17 who left. The school peaked at 596 students in the early 70s. That can be linked to the economy, Martin says.
Boon of logging, boon of the mill, fishing, everything.
But now, student data shows Haines has changed.
Almost half of our student population qualify for free or reduced lunch. That means that about half of our families are not living at what we would think the full quality of life kind of amount of money that the government anticipates that you need to live. And so that's a significant portion of our town that are struggling.
She doesn't think the trend will change unless Haines' economy does. Though the school is funded based on enrollment numbers, departures won't affect the budget this year. The student count was finalized in October. But fewer students will mean less money for the school next year, unless new families move to town. In Haines, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, eating your vegetables. Getting kids to eat their greens is easier if they've grown them themselves. That's one of the takeaways for a school district in Southeast Alaska where the vast majority of students are eligible for free or reduced priced lunches. The kids have been raising fruits and vegetables in greenhouses, and they've been powering the project with local energy. KTOO's Jacob Resnick has this report.
Good morning, crew. How's everybody doing?
Good.
We'll meet you guys.
An elementary
there.
Class in Kaufman Cove is assembled for a morning lesson. There are no desks in this classroom. There are UV lights in row after row of raised soil beds. Cody Boyce runs the district's agriculture program.
So today we're going to focus on planting some carrots. Yay!
This past year, the school built a 6,900 square foot greenhouse. Wood-fired boilers feed heat into the hydroponic system. The roots of the crops sit in warm water rather than soil.
These are the boilers that heat the school and the teacher housing. We have a separate boiler down in the greenhouse that just heats the greenhouse water.
Much of rural Alaska is a desert when it comes to fresh fruits and vegetables. Not here.
While most farmers or producers are winding down this time of year, especially in Alaska, we're just winding up. So you can see we've got a bunch of lettuce, kale, and charge. Really cool weather crops that'll enjoy this winter.
Damon Holtman is an eighth grader. What's he grown so far?
Lettuce, zucchini, pumpkin, watermelon, tomato, pepper, sunflowers, kale, a bunch of stuff.
Kindergartner Emma Boyce is carefully spreading carrot seeds for this winter's crop, but she's still thinking about last summer's berries.
We got like these huge blueberries. They were huge, but they were yummy too.
The wood-fired boilers make the farming possible.
If they were burning oil to maintain the temperatures in their greenhouses, that would be prohibitively expensive.
Bob Deering is the U.S. Forest Service's Renewable Energy Coordinator for Alaska.
So the transitioning over to a low-cost wood energy has been the enabling factor for communities to add on these greenhouses.
The school district pays $200 for each cord of stacked and seasoned wood. That bounty on firewood has offered opportunities to underemployed families with access to a truck and chainsaw.
By sourcing their wood from local supplies, not only do you not send money out for the oil, but that money stays to pay for somebody to harvest and process the wood. That guy then can afford a house, which cascades through the community.
Prince of Wales Island is mostly covered by the Tongass National Forest. Logging has steadily declined. Yet the former logging camps and mill town communities are hanging on. Lauren Birch is superintendent of Southeast Island School District, who got the wood boiler program off the ground. His district runs six schools. A seventh closed last year because there were too few kids.
There aren't a lot of jobs. I mean, they've opened up some logging again, but, on the whole, that's somebody from somewhere else comes in, lives in a camp, takes off again, and, doesn't open schools, doesn't bring kids.
The local diet on Prince of Wales Island includes a lot of meat and fish, but store-bought produce is expensive. It's about $5 for a head of lettuce.
And by the time the broccoli gets to our store, you can hold it up and wiggle it because it's that, it's that old.
Priscilla Golding is the district's grant coordinator. The Alaska Energy Authority has funded more than a dozen wood boilers statewide. Four of them are owned and operated by this school district. She says eating habits are changing now, too. At first, it was just teachers and teenagers that went for salad.
Although one of the cooks told me there's been like a little fad in the first grade of broccoli with melted cheese over it. And one kid just really loved that, and the fad spread to the whole first grade.
There have been setbacks. An outbreak of aphids devastated Kaufman Cove's summer lettuce crop. Birch is frank about these challenges.
You'd have 1,200 lettuce plants in there and come in one morning and they're all laying on their side and no one knows anything. Did they put too much of the chemical in? Did they let the water supply if something happen? And whoever was supposed to be watching over the weekend just never seems to know what happened.
Running hydroponic greenhouses has a steep learning curve, but he says staff and students are learning from their failures. And in the meantime, the kids are eating better and working with their hands.
If kids will grow it, they'll try eating it. I mean, they'll try a Brussels sprout if they grow it.
This school year will be the first full growing season for the district's greenhouses. Surplus produce is sold to the local community. The farm-to-table fad has come to rural Southeast Alaska. For AK, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Tammy Michaels-Jimenez in Anchorage.
I've lived here, but I'm originally from Bethel, Alaska. I married my husband, and he's originally from Peru. I've always, since I was young, I was always into Hispanic people, Latinos. I don't know why. My younger sister, I remember she was dating somebody from some village, I forget. And I remember she had hickeys on her neck. And then she came home and she introduced my parents to him. My dad was like, "What's your name?" to the guy, and he said his name, and my dad goes, "Oh, that's your cousin," and I was just laughing. So that's a good thing. So when I say to my siblings, I go, "Well, at least I know that who I'm with is I'm not related to." Because we have so many relations, you know, we never know. So I'm like, "No, I'm not dating no Alaskan." He wants to move to Peru, but I said, "No." I said, "I'll go for a vacation because I'm Alaskan. This is my culture, you know." And then I rented DVDs and I got books and I read about it. And I'm like, "Nah." I just told him, I said, "We can go like for 6 months and then, you know, come back." But he's saying he just wants to move back for good. And he's like, "Well, what are we going to do?" And I was like, "Well, you could stay and I'll just go back to Alaska."
Tammy Michaels-Jimenez lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Jacob Resnick and Ann Hillman. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media. We had reports tonight from Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman, Adeline Baxter, and Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Davis Hovey in Nome, and Barrett Wilbur in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. You can nominate your favorite teacher at bpteachers.com. The deadline is February 1st.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the Federal Plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.